content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin today on page 8, Who's Who in Sports, line 2. And we have Domantas Sabonis, Indiana Pacers forward. His height is 6'11", his weight is 240 pounds. He was born May 31st, 1996, hometown Portland, Oregon. In his fifth season, Sabonis made his first All-Star team in 2020. He averaged 18.5 points and 12.4 rebounds, fifth in the league for the season, and had four triple-doubles. Sabonis was drafted by Oklahoma City in 2016. After one season, he was traded to Indiana in a deal that sent Paul George to Oklahoma City. Did you know Sabonis' dad, Arvidas, is in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame? The 7'3" native of Lithuania did make his NBA debut until he was 31. Next, we have DeAndre Hopkins, Arizona Cardinals wide receiver. His height is 6'1", his weight is 212 pounds. He was born June 6, 1992, in hometown Central South Carolina. After being traded by the Texans before the 2020 season, Hopkins hit the ground running with the Cardinals. He had 14 catches for 151 yards in his first game. Hopkins had at least 100 catches in three of his seven seasons with Houston, and he led the NFL with 13 touchdown catches in 2017. Did you know Antonio Brown of the Steelers and Brandon Marshall of the Bears are tied for the most 100 catch seasons with 6 apiece? And finally, Jared Butler of the Baylor Bears. He's a guard. His height is 6'3", his weight is 195 pounds. He was born August 25th, 2000, hometown Reserve, Louisiana. Following a sophomore year in which he averaged 16 points and 13.1 assists per game, Butler was named a third-team All-America. He led the Bears to a 26-4 record. After withdrawing from the 2020 NBA draft, Butler was named the Big 12 preseason player of the year. Did you know, thanks in large part to Butler's 22 points, Baylor won at Kansas last year, 67-55. It was the Bears' first ever win in Fog Allen Fieldhouse, which opened in 1966. Now we'll move to page 22, and the area is trending. James Wiseman, center, Golden State Warriors. And here we have a picture of James on page 23, supersized. Wiseman, who improved his shot over the past year, is as big and athletic as any center in the NBA. After a lost season at the University of Memphis, the seven-footer is ready to make an impact with his new team, which is also looking to bounce back after a rough year. For the last year or so, meditation has been a huge part of James Wiseman's daily routine. Kobe Bryant meditated, and Wiseman absorbed everything about the late Lakers star, from watching his online interviews to reading his wizened series of children's books. For 10 to 20 minutes every morning, Wiseman will just calmly breathe. He needed the time to himself. He allowed him to forget about the hardship of growing up in a modest house in Nashville, where food could be scarce and a good week was when the light stayed on. He would also forget about the University of Memphis, about a once promising college experience that ended almost before it started. In fall 2019, Wiseman, a 7'1" center, was a five-star recruit who signed with the Tigers, coached by local legend and former NBA star Anthony Penny Hardaway. But due to a lengthy legal fight with the NCAA, Wiseman played only three games before withdrawing from school in mid-December. It was difficult. His mother, Donza Lee, artist, says it took away his love for basketball. I could see it in him. It felt like his world was crumbling. So in the months leading up to the NBA draft, Wiseman had a lot on his mind. I wanted to embrace college with my teammates, win a national championship, have fun, live out the dreams, says Weissman. You know how life is. Life happens. This year, though, it's been kind of crazy. But Weissman knew that he had to keep moving forward. So once he finished his daily meditation, he would hit the court. For months, he trained at the Miami Hoop School. He worked out 3 times a day, packing muscle onto his 250-pound frame and extending his range to fit the mold of the modern NBA center. It all paid off in November when the Golden State Warriors took him with the 2nd pick in the NBA draft. It allowed him to finally put his troubles behind him. Challenging times. Growing up in Asheville, Weissman was a familiar figure in the Village Trail section of town. He could be found banging in shots at all hours, often under the glow of streetlights. His sister, Jaquarius, 7 years older, was a frequent one-on-one partner, as were the handful of cousins who lived nearby. Weissman loved basketball. He just didn't always like the physicality of it. As a 4-year-old, he was allowed to play with 4th graders because of his height. In church league games, an oversized Weissman would stand in the corner, arms crossed above his head. He didn't want anyone to touch him, Artis recalls. She signed him up to play football in elementary school. He got used to contact quickly and was ready to bang on the court. By 8th grade, Weissman had shot up to 6'8". From then on, it was basketball only. He started showing up at a neighborhood court, a skinny 13-year-old looking to get in games with men in their mid-20s. They used to rough me up, says Weissman, but that's how I gained my mental toughness. After his sophomore year of high school, Weissman transferred to Memphis to play at East High for Hardaway, who had been one of his heroes growing up. Hardaway helped out the family with some money to help cover their moving expenses. That became a problem when Hardaway was hired by Memphis and Weissman committed to play for him. Since Hardaway had starred at Memphis, he was technically a booster. And when Weissman committed to the Tigers, that made the previous payment an illegal enticement. Weissman played 3 games, averaging 19.7 points, 10.3 rebounds, and 3.0 blocks in 23 minutes per game. Then the NCAA suspended him. He could serve a suspension and rejoin the Tigers in mid-January, in time for the American Athletic Conference tourney. He had remained eligible. He says he had a 4.0 GPA in his first semester. Always a dedicated student, he speaks conversational Mandarin and has dreams of becoming a venture capitalist. Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is one of his favorite books. He keeps a journal of the philanthropic things he hopes to do, like opening up a community center. But the ongoing drama surrounding his playing status had drained him. On December 19th, Weissman withdrew from college. It was just overwhelming, says Hardaway. I get the NCAA has to do its job to do, but he was like, hey, man, I haven't done anything. Why am I being punished? Weissman began preparing for the draft. Basketball has evolved, but the center position is still valuable. Gone are the days of big men who post up near the rim. In are springy, versatile big men who can protect the paint, run the floor, and rim roll off picks to throw down lobs. If a big man can also space the floor by shooting threes, a la Anthony Davis, then he's what every man is seeking. Weissman is chiseled from that rim runner mold, says an NBA scout. He's as big and athletic as anybody in our league. But can Weissman add the offensive game and long-distance shooting that could turn him into an all-star? He has studied fellow lefty David Robinson, noting the Spurs' legend's ability, agility, and touch. Centers may not have hoisted threes in Robinson's time, but the Admiral commanded him from mid-range. Back then, there weren't a lot of big men that could shoot, Weissman says. He changed the game. In high school, Hardaway also began to change Weissman's jump shot, moving the release point from behind his head to closer to the front of it for a quicker and more accurate trigger. That really took his range further out, says Hardaway. He was always striving to be better. Weissman wants his game to span generations, so during the pandemic he doubled down on his own film work, particularly of 1980's Moses Malone and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He also studied Kobe. Wiseman never met Bryant. They crossed paths once at a camp when Wiseman was in high school, but he revered Bryant's approach. Wiseman devoured his book, the Harry Potter-type series conceived by Bryant, in which players discover their strength. If you have ups and downs or struggles, you have got to be willing to have perseverance, to not being afraid to fail, to always just keep working, Wiseman says. There was a lot of great advice that came from that book. The Memphis experience behind him, Wiseman's love for the game has been restored. His family sees that. When Wiseman pops back into Nashville to visit artists, has to make sure that there is a gym open and available to him. You can see it in the smile on his face, his artist. He eats, drinks, and sleeps basketball now. When we talk on the phone, he starts telling me what his shot looks like. He's happy again. Things got even better when the Warriors took him. After an injury-plagued season, Golden State will once again be a tough team in the Western Conference. The Warriors took a hit when guard Klay Thompson suffered a second straight season-ending injury, which puts even more pressure on Wiseman to contribute. But he is up for the challenge. Everything about this last year has been really hard, he says. I'm ready to put it all behind me. I'm ready to move forward. Oceana and Nina Dobrev want to save sharks. I used to be scared, but then I learned the facts. Nina Dobrev, actress and ocean advocate. Nina Dobrev, actress and ocean advocate. Sharks keep the oceans healthy and aren't really interested in us. It's actually our interest in their fins that's scary. Millions of sharks end up in the global fin trade every year. Visit oceana.org/save sharks to see more from Nina and learn how you can help protect these vital ocean animals. The science of sports. Science is everywhere. From the atmosphere of the mountains to charts on a computer, every curveball is a multidisciplinary event. The reason a curveball curves involves a scientific phenomenon called the Magnus effect. Spin causes the air pressure on top of the ball to be greater than that below it, causing it to drop. The same effect is observable in other sports and even certain boats to medicine. Common knowledge held for a long time that the curveball was a dangerous pitch that caused injuries. But a 2016 article published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Injury found that Major League Baseball pitchers who had Tommy John surgery had thrown more fastballs. Radar. The introduction of StatCast equipment into Major League Baseball stadiums in the 2015 helped teams better measure on-field performance. Radar technology specifically made it possible to track the spin rate on individual pitches. Now teams can measure exactly how filthy a pitch is. And pitchers are trying to increase their spin, leading to curveballs that drop farther and fastballs that rise more. Brand new baseballs are hard to grip and thus hard to spin. In order to ensure pitchers can get the grip necessary to throw the curveball, all game-used baseballs are rubbed with mud, specifically mud from the Delaware River, which has just the right texture for the purpose. Mookie Betts, Los Angeles Dodgers right fielder. Fast facts. After being traded from the Red Sox to the Dodgers before last season, Betts signed a 12-year, $365 million contract extension. He was worth the money. Betts hit 16 homers in the 60-game season, then hit two more in the playoffs, including one in Game 6 of the World Series en route to Los Angeles' first title in 32 years. And next we have the brand-new Australian women's champion Naomi Osaka. Fast facts. In September, Osaka won her second United States Open title. Her first Open win came in 2018 against Serena Williams, and it made Osaka the first player born in Japan to win a Grand Slam event. For her play on the court and her social activism, she was honored as one of the winners of 2020 Sports Person of the Year. Page 34, The Science of Sports, continued. Chemistry. What makes a team click? Miami's Jimmy Butler discussed the value of locker room vibes. The Miami Heat didn't have as much raw talent as the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks, but Guess which team ended up winning the Eastern Conference and nearly knocking off the Los Angeles Lakers in the finals? The Heat thrived because of their chemistry, the way in which their individual elements blended together. Chemistry is really important, says forward Jimmy Butler. You've got to be like being around one another. If you're hanging around one another and you like being around one another, it's going to show out there on the basketball floor. There isn't going to be too much bickering because you realize, look, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Calm down. We get it. For a player like Butler, a vocal veteran on a team with many youngsters, it's important that all the personalities gel. That hasn't always been the case on his past teams. But in Miami, he was able to develop relationships that allowed him to speak freely to his teammates. If you rock with that individual off the floor, he knows I've got his best interests at heart. Butler says, I'm not just getting on you because I got nobody else to yell at. Butler sees the Heat having another big season. I think it's going to be the same way. Basically, got the same group of guys. And science backs him up. Nasir Contractor, a professor of behavioral sciences at Northwestern University, performed a study recently that attempted to measure team chemistry. The study found that teams with players who had experience together in winning situations won more than teams that simply had good players. That's why so many teams filled with big names don't get results, including the first year of the Heat's Big Three of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. They hadn't had time to come together. Contractor likens the bond teammates forged to one seen in nature. If you're able to bring together hydrogen and oxygen with the right chemistry, he says, you get water, which is something greater than the sum of its parts. Titration, brewing up something good. Jimmy Butler didn't just make headlines for his play in the NBA bubble. He gained notoriety for running Big Face Coffee, a pop-up shop that provided quality drinks to NBA stars. Butler charged $20 a cup, no matter the size. Two cups were $50. Why? His clientele could afford it. While his pricing was something of a joke, Butler takes his coffee seriously. I wish I could take 5 years off and open a cafe, he says. On a trip to Europe before last season, he spent a lot of time in cafes talking to patrons. What do you have in your cup? Do you have skim milk or almond milk? Before you know it, you're in there for an hour and a half just learning about people, which is what I truly enjoy whenever when I get to go out outside of being the athlete. Butler was never a serious coffee drinker until his trainer, James Scott, pointed something out to him. He told me, you know, coffee is actually good for you in moderation, right? And is among the more than 1,000 compounds in coffee are valuable nutrients as well as antioxidants, which slow damage to cells in the body. And the caffeine in coffee can, in moderation, improve energy levels and mental function. Butler is constantly testing new methods of roasting, which brings out the flavor in the green beans. As he's mastering the science of coffee, he's also moving on to the art. What we're really studying and focusing on now is how to do it a little artwork on the top, he says. It's so hard, dude. Tribology Band. For being too well engineered? Sometimes progress looks a lot like cheating. When equipment suddenly makes everyone better at a sport, it's called technology doping, and controversy ensues. The most infamous instance remains the LZR Racer swimsuit from Speedo. The swimwear company partnered with NASA to create a skin-tight suit that came out in 2008. The LZR Racer, which covers the racer's torso and legs, uses a space-age material that causes less friction with water than human skin. At the 2008 Olympics, 25 world records fell, in large part thanks to the LZR Racer. The suit was soon banned. Nike's AlphaFi shoes, which have a carbon fiber sole that allows runners to lose less energy with each step, barely avoided being banned for this year's Summer Olympics. Ever since Bill Sutter flew onto the field at halftime of the first Super Bowl, sports fans have been enthralled at the possibilities presented by jetpacks. Sutter also made an appearance at the opening ceremonies of the 1984 Summer Olympics, shown at right. Dreamers imagined a day when football would be played in midair by jetting jocks. It's now 55 years later, and we're still stuck on the terra firm. Suter's original pack could only keep him aloft for 20 seconds, which is hardly long enough to run more than a quick play. And it discharged a 1,300-degree blast of steam, which makes blocking and tackling tricky. The good news is there's been progress. Current technology allows for speeds of well over 100 miles for 10 minutes. There's a catch, though. The main obstacle is permission from the Federal Aviation Administration to fly, says Boris Jerry, Operations Director of Jetpack Aviation. Like any aircraft, you just can't fly where you want. Jetpacks are also very expensive. While Jerry doesn't expect to see jetpack football anytime soon, he hopes there will be other forms of competition. We are already discussing different projects where we will fly the jetpack in a game or race, he says. I bet this will be in the next 24 months. Until then, we'll rely on the Mandalorian to satisfy our jetpack's craving. Biochemistry. Why can't we run a 3-minute mile? Roger Bannister is widely credited for running the first ever 4-minute mile in 1954 at Oxford University. The current world record time, Hisham El-Jouazou's 3.4:3.13, happened more than 20 years ago. In 1999, have humans run as fast as they can? Will a new Roger Bannister ever emerge to break the 3-minute barrier? The former question is uncertain, but scientists have reason to believe a sub-3-minute mile is physically impossible. Usain Bolt, the fastest sprinter alive, ran 100 meters in 9.58 seconds, extrapolated to a mile about 1.609 meters. That pace would mean 2.34 time. Yet Bolt has never run a mile, and some fans doubt his ability to break even the 5-minute barrier. The reason has to do with oxygen. In a sprint, a runner can go all out. In a run requiring even a moderate distance, the athlete is limited by their body's ability to move oxygen via the bloodstream. The body breaks down glucose, a sugar molecule, using oxygen to create energy. If an insufficient amount of oxygen is present, the body produces lactate, which causes muscle cramping and weakness. Humanity's inability to run a 2.59 mile has nothing to do with strong legs or stringy shoes, but a fundamental limit of our biology. Astronauts staying in shape. Staying in shape in space. From Astronautics. Eat your heart out, Noah Syndergaard. A 100-mile-per-hour fastball is nice and all, but is nothing compared to the pitch Jessica Meir above threw to open the 2019 World Series. Since she was on the International Space Station, the ball was traveling more than 17,000 miles per hour when it left her hand. I had the fastest fastball on record, says Meir. It's a fun thing to think about. Is it ever going to slow down? And the answer is no, not unless it is counteracted. So, props to fellow astronaut Drew Morgan, who got a piece of the heater. When you spend as much time in space as Meir did, she was on the ISS for 205 days. You have to come up with ways to amuse yourself, and there are certainly sports astronauts play. People get pretty creative in terms of perfecting their Superman run, pushing off and seeing if you can get down the entire length of the space station without touching anything, she says. Astronauts in microgravity spend a surprising amount of time engaged in physical activity. They work out for 2.5 hours. Just like on Earth, exercise is extremely important in terms of keeping us healthy and fit. But it's even more important in space, Meir says. That's because without gravity, we would lose muscle mass. Our muscles would shrink. Our bone density would decrease. Even when we're not exercising, just sitting here in a chair on Earth, I'm still reacting to this gravitational vector. The weight of gravity is keeping me down, and my muscles and bones are reacting against that. So when you go to space, you immediately will start losing that muscle and losing that bone density because you don't need it. You're not reacting to gravity. Lifting weights in a weightless environment is tricky. So NASA scientists came up with a system of vacuum tubes and flywheel cables to create resistance. And cardio work is important as well. Engineers came up with a harness that keeps astronauts on a treadmill so they can run. And they also ride bikes. What's unique about a bike in space? Mir asked. What don't you need? There's no seat and no handlebars on the bike because we don't need them. You just clip in your pedals and you go. I like to think of it as a unicycle in space. Astronomy. Are there sports on other planets? Why wouldn't there be, says Bill Nye, human scientist from the Milky Way galaxy. As I kid, how many planets in the universe might be home to intelligent life? So let's run the numbers. Let's say we have 200 billion stars in our galaxy with 10 planets each. That's 2 trillion planets. Let's say 1 in a million of those has intelligent life. That's a million planets that might have life. And that's just our galaxy. There have got to be other Earth-like planets. People ask me, do you believe in aliens? It's not something you believe in. It's more like, do you expect that there are aliens? Yeah. Next, what might sports on other planets look like? When you go in the ocean, you have all these crazy creatures that could not survive up in land in a gravity environment. And so it's very reasonable to me that sports on other worlds are all underwater. The whole thing. There's a whole world that's just water. Everything underwater? Yeah. And they wouldn't even think of a dry land. And they'd wonder, why would you want to run around in air? You'll dry out and collapse. You gotta have bones to keep your shape. What the heck? It's awful. I'm paraphrasing, but keep in mind, my fellow scientist, I'm an earthly made of water, trying to think about what life would be like on other worlds. And it's probably no coincidence that I thought, oh, you gotta have water. I'm made of water. There's got to be water. Survival of the fittest. Once molecules found a way to make copies of themselves, says Nye, they have been competing. So deep within us is competing. The time for today's episode of SI Kids and Sports Illustrated. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-835-138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.